Hi, this is 1620 Talk, Cannabis Communication for Veterans on Millennium Grown Broadcast Network. I am your host, Matthew Kale. And we're starting off a series in which we will be profiling a number of veterans organizations, some new or some are old, in an attempt to figure out how today's veteran is different from veterans in conflicts past, and how we will continue using these differences to affect the future and our place in it. Our first profile today is on the VFW. Veterans of Foreign Wars was originally started by Spanish-American War veterans in 1899. The goal was to speed rehabilitation for returning service members, to assist widows, orphans, and dependents of deceased service members, and to promote Americanism through education and constructive service. Our first guest today is Kurt Bean of VFW Post Number 1 in Denver. Hi, Kurt. How you doing?
Good, Matt. How are you?
Pretty good, pretty good. So I'm going to just launch right into it. What exactly is special about VFW Post Number 1? I mean, it's number one, right? So what makes it special?
So it's pretty unique in a lot of different ways. Obviously, it is the first post ever created, which is kind of cool. And we also are leading the way in a lot of different areas for veterans. Traditionally, the VFW has kind of lost its way. Has become a kind of a breeding ground for people to go to and drink cheap beer and go to a dark hole in the wall bar and kind of vent your frustrations to fellow veterans, and which is fine and good, but there are plenty of bars where veterans can connect at, and we're trying to kind of break that mold and get back to the core principles of the VFW, which is providing resources for veterans and helping them deal with, whatever barriers they have from their military service.
So a lot of people, myself included, we've always had this opinion of these older veteran organizations like the VFW. They're smoky halls, old vets just knocking back pints and trading war stories. And I'm noticing that there's a lot of young vets, they just aren't interested in that whatsoever.
Right, and I think what happened was, World War II and Vietnam era veterans, it wasn't really part of their healing process. Wasn't accessing resources, they didn't know how to, kind of access and develop these resources for veterans, because especially in the Vietnam era, they were not accepted by the community, and they weren't really able to, access the resources that are available now. So it wasn't, really a thing for them to create these resources because, the only way they dealt with their problems was to, self-medicate with drugs and alcohol and to, vent to other fellow veterans. So, and that's really kind of what the VFW turned into, was just a place for veterans to get together and kind of get their frustrations with their own lives or society or what have you. But I think the younger veterans, now they are many resources now that there is so much information available to these veterans, that they're seeing that they can have an impact in their community in a positive way just by being involved in VFW, rather than being involved, being uninvolved and just showing up to drink beer and trade war stories.
Yeah, I think that's like one of the biggest things that VFW has always had to offer that a lot of other places didn't. I mean, the alcohol-based model, of course, it may have been detrimental in the long run, but the community aspect is something. Bringing veterans back out of their self-imposed isolation, because most of us, we get back from war and we don't know how to interact with society anymore. We isolate ourselves and we continue to push away the people that love us and the people that care about us eventually until we're all alone. And that loneliness in itself, it's immensely suffocating and hurtful to the veterans who are coming back from these wars, right?
Correct. Yeah, and that's a big thing we're trying to create there. We're trying to create a community, but we're not only trying to create a community that supports veterans. We're trying to create a community that supports the community around the veterans also, because we want the community, in the general vicinity of the veterans to be able to kind of support the veterans however they can. And that's why we opened up our VFW to anyone and everyone, especially on, this Friday is our biggest event of the month, called First Friday, and we have a big art show put on by Art of War, which is an art program that we do there. and we display veteran artwork. We also display civilian artwork. And in the community, everyone comes through there and kind of sees how we're collaborating, and it makes it easier for them to reach out and be like, hey, how can we help the veteran community, and how can we get involved? Because they see that we're involved in the civilian community. Because traditionally, civilians, you know, they stand offish from the veteran community because, you know, they feel like they're not, you know, able to be a part of it because, you know, of whatever reasons, because they don't know what it's like, you know, serving. But we're trying to break down those barriers and try to get the civilian community, you know, to kind of parade around our veterans and, you know, help them, you know, support them however they can.
Now, this is one of the ways in which VFW Post Number One's how their model differs from all other posts across the nation, right?
Yeah. So traditionally, I believe in most posts they have like a buzzer. You get buzzed in, show your ID, and you go in there, and it's a dark hole, wall bar, and everyone gives you dirty looks. Our post is actually, doesn't look like a post at all, really. It's a big open space as you walk in. It's a big open gallery, and we have all veteran artwork hanging in the entire main room, and then you go to the back gallery, and there's civilian art hanging. Then you go upstairs, and there's studios for veterans to be able to create artwork. We have a printing studio. We have a photography studio. A visual art studio where they're able to create paintings and create any kind of visual arts they'd like to get into. And we do yoga and meditation there. We offer classes for how to improve your financial stability. And any kind of self-improvement classes we offer there. And these are all resources for veterans. You know, we're always just trying to, you know, improve veterans' lives for the better.
Yeah, and I got to tell all the other veterans out here who are listening right now, I've been in this post number one, and it is unlike any other VFW post I've ever been into. It's a completely open space, hardwood floors throughout the entire thing, artwork on the walls. There's multiple levels. You go upstairs, and I also got to mention this now also because Kurt, you've started a nonprofit organization. It's kind of it's sort of affiliated with this VFW Post Number One. Is that correct? It's and it's Art of War, right?
Right. Yeah, we're actually really great partners with VFW, and they're fantastic in the way and by providing all the workspace we need to conduct our organization. So Art of War is a program dedicated to helping veterans through creative outlets. So we do visual arts, painting, drawing, printmaking. We do photography, filmmaking, yoga and meditation as part of our program as well. And the VFW allows us to do this program in their building free of charge. And honestly, we've taken over the entire building. We're using it to the best of our ability and kind of making the most of the space. So one big thing, I don't know if you want to get into this right now, but one big thing we're offering on the 15th of October is we're doing a class to educate veterans on the possibility of using cannabis as a resource to deal with PTSD, which I think is really important, you know, especially in Colorado. Cannabis is so prevalent, and I know a lot of veterans, including myself, that aren't using it properly. They're using it recreationally rather than specifically for PTSD, you know, and I have friends that are veterans that kind of stay away from cannabis because they've had bad experiences with it as far as being overly paranoid or being overly lazy or what have you. And that's just because they don't know, you know, how to use, you know, cannabis properly. So I think it's a really, really important thing to be able to, for veterans to be able to access cannabis and access it in a way that's going to, you know, help them, you know, be, you know, a better part of their community.
Yeah, and this is a huge, huge change from, of course, you know, veterans organizations in the past. You know, cannabis use was never something the VFW had to deal with in the past. So, like, how are they actually, how's the organization addressing the problem? Or, well, I guess it's not a problem. How are they addressing the issue, and how are they accommodating the vets that actually do use it for their issues, the wounds of war?
Well, the VFW isn't necessarily pro or against marijuana, from my understanding.
What's their official party line?
I'm sorry?
What's their official party line on it? Do you know?
No, well, we've tried doing events there through Grow for Vets and other organizations where we're actually giving away cannabis to veterans.
Yeah.
And that was kind of ixnayed just because we'd have cannabis on, you know, in the building, and they were afraid that it would turn us into a target for, you know, theft and everything else, because we are in a kind of a transitional area in where our building is at. So we're trying to not become a target for, you know, the community to be able to want to access into our building. So I thought that would be not a good idea. But the VFW's official stance on marijuana, though, is, from my understanding, this is not a direct quote, but if it's legal in the state that you're in, then there's no issue with it. You know, there are VFWs, let's say Nevada, that have a bunny ranch, and, you know, type legal prostitution in their building. We learned this because we asked about you know, their policy on medical marijuana for veterans. And their stance is, if it's legal, then, you know, they're all for it, you know, so which is great for us, because we're able to, you know, educate veterans on you know, medical marijuana and how they can use it properly, and not really, you know, have any kind of bias from, you know, BSW on national level.
Yeah, I got to say, that is amazing and shocking, the fact that the Nevada VFW actually has services provide, well, I don't know if they provide services or anything, or just provide a link to a bunny ranch. That's amazingly progressive in a lot of ways. I mean, I guess a lot of people would look down on it, but the fact is that it's a legal activity in the state of Nevada, and likewise cannabis is here. Why shouldn't it be allowed, right?
Of course. Yeah. I mean, if people are doing it, you know, civilians, you know, I don't know why veterans shouldn't be doing it. And have access to it as well, you know.
Yeah. So now, primarily the veterans you see come in through the door that do use cannabis, these are primarily younger vets, correct?
Well, I mean, I don't know, honestly. You know, I've had a lot of the Vietnam era veterans come up to me, and they saw the lawsuit that we're attached to, and they're really, you know, inquisitive about it, and really interested in, you know, how the progression is going. And so, I mean, obviously the Vietnam era veterans, you know, they were, you know, using weed, you know, as recreationally, you know, way before we were even born, you know? So, I mean, a lot of them have kind of gotten out of it because it was not really part of mainstream society. I mean, it was looked down upon and illegal, of course, for a very long time. And now that's becoming legal, and they have access to it, and they're rediscovering it again, which is really kind of beautiful, you know, and they're really able to, you know, kind of get back to, you know, the real things that were benefiting them. And they feel, and a lot of the thought, you know, as medicine, as they're getting out of the military in the 60s and 70s, because, you know, there wasn't any other options then. So it's really interesting to me, you know, how they're rediscovering it. And I'd like to learn more about that, honestly, is how it's really.
So now you brought this up because you, as well as myself, were both co-plaintiffs in a lawsuit against the state of Colorado for access to cannabis for patients with PTSD. Now, when did you figure out that you had PTSD?
So I've been out since 2008. I was in the Army, 5th Mountain Division. Saw a lot of action overseas. You know, I was a scout and a sniper, so I was pretty heavily into what was going on outside the wire. And so when I got out, you know, I had a really bad experience in the military, just as far as having a really rough deployment, and I was stop loss for a year and a half, so I was in much longer than I wanted to be. And then on top of that, we had extended when I was deployed. So I was just really bitter just in the military in general. So when I got out, I avoided, you know, all things military, you know, and I just wanted to be a civilian and get back to my roots and, you know, kind of, you know, not worry about the stresses of, you know, came along with the military. But what I discovered was I was just suppressing, you know, things that I should have been dealing with, you know, for 5 years, I was just suppressing, you know, different things that were coming up, and I was like, oh yeah, I'm just, you know, I'll just push that down and deal with it later. And I got to a breaking point, you know, in 2012, to the point where I really needed to seek help, and I noticed it was affecting my daily life, it's affecting my work. At the time, I was working for the YMCA here in Littleton, Colorado, and I noticed that it was just really got to the point that it built up to became a real problem for me. So I sought help in the form of going to the inpatient PTSD treatment clinic here in Denver.
Yeah. That's what I, that was probably the very first thing that I did. I went to the inpatient clinic. I was referred to, outpatient programs, EMDR. I don't know how many of these various different treatments you've tried. Have you run the whole gamut?
Honestly, no. I mean, like, I was always just really against treatment, you know, like traditional forms of treatment, at least. Just because, you know, I've seen a lot of guys that are going through those things and, you know, the outcomes have not been good, you know. So I avoided medication. I tried medication for a little while, traditional medication, and it turned me into a zombie. I didn't like how I was, the person I was becoming. So I took myself off of it and have been off it, you know, for about 4 years now. I've tried a little bit of everything, you know, and I found things that work for me, and I stick to them, and I try to share those things with the veteran community, and that's why we do what we do with Art of War, and that's why we do what we do with the VFW, because, you know, not there's not one thing that's going to work for everybody, but, you know, if you throw a thousand things at something, you know, you're going to find something that's going to stick, and that's going to be able to be a positive and beneficial solution for these veterans.
Yeah, everybody's different, you know, like some people will respond to canine therapy or equine therapy or art therapy or recreational therapy, and some people won't. Some people will respond to cannabis. Some people will not. Some people will respond to all kinds of different activities, and some people won't. And it's such an individual issue, and PTSD is such a unique complex of symptoms in each and every individual. So, it definitely, I am all about giving people as many options as possible to try to tackle this issue, because most people, there's no reasonable way to go about actually tackling it, you know. It just seems insurmountable, and it's pretty depressing when you're coming up against that wall and you don't really know what to do.
It's really overwhelming, and it really is, and I can obviously see why everyone's kind of upset with the VA. Because they're not able to provide all these resources that all these veterans need. But the reality is, I mean, they're underfunded and, you know, understaffed, and they're not. Our government isn't large enough to be able to provide all these services.
Staff to
step up and fill in those gaps, you know.
So, do you see like kind of a revolution within the veteran ranks right now, or are we just not there yet?
No, I see it. I see it all the time. You know, there's guys that I've served with, and there's guys that I'm meeting throughout the country that are taking it upon themselves to, you know, start these programs that are really going to be benefiting veterans. And what's great about it is these programs are so successful because there's no red tape for these veterans to get in these programs, and they're veteran ran and veteran led. So these veterans are getting integrated with veterans instantly, and they're creating these communities that are sharing other programs with them. You know, we're huge partners with, you know, a lot of veteran programs in Colorado, and so anytime I find a veteran that's in a unique situation, I have a pool of resources to pull from of programs that I have, you know, physically gone to and checked them out and make sure they're legitimate before I send these veterans, you know, on their way to these programs, because the unfortunate thing is there are programs out there, you know, veteran programs that aren't providing the resources that they should be providing, and they're really pooling all their money just to pay their exorbitant salaries, you know, rather than provide these resources for veterans. So,
yeah.
I mean, you got to be really careful who you support and who you go to access these resources, because some of these organizations are just not reputable.
Yeah, that's a huge problem in a lot of nonprofit organizations, where the majority of the money either goes towards raising more money or towards paying the salaries of the executive director and all the other board member positions. I see that a lot. It's not just in it's not restricted to any one sector of the nonprofit organization sector. I mean, it's just it's rampant all over the place. It doesn't matter whether it's UNICEF or whether it's a veteran organization. Although I have to say, a number of the veteran organizations I have looked at, their executive directors, they usually accept only a nominal salary, or they either accept no salary at all, or they accept a nominal salary, something that's very small. A lot of these, UNICEF and things like that, they'll have $600,000 yearly salaries, whereas
right.
some of these veteran organizations, I don't know how VFW is, but I want to say that the small bit of research on it that I did, I think the executive director does not accept a salary. Is that correct?
As far as I know, that's correct, yeah. And, you know, and if I were to guess, I would guess, you know, as far as veteran organizations go, there were less organizations that were, you know, kind of the bad apples of the group. Just because of the foundation that they're established on. But yeah, I've heard all these horror stories of these, like, you know, children cancer funds or women breast cancer funds that are, you know, they're going out and buying jet skis and going on vacations and things. And I really can't even imagine the kind of person would do stuff like that. And I'm hoping, you know, I'm really like, I would really bet that, you know, all these veteran organizations are on the lower end of those numbers of people exploiting the resources. But I really hope that you know, things can kind of be tightened up, because, you know, these organizations that are, you know, are draining, you know, the society for resources and for attention are really putting a damper on the ones that are actually, you know, making headway and doing some positive work. So I really hope in the future there's some more regulations on what's going on with that.
Well, we will be profiling quite a number of different veterans organizations here in the next few weeks. But you mentioned that, you know, the VFW, number one, they're kind of unique amongst VFWs in America in that you're doing all these separate things like yoga and art therapy and then the, you know, movie nights and things like that. You have all these additional kinds of outlets for people with trauma from war. How is your particular change of model, how is this shaking up the VFW at large?
Well, that's an interesting question, because we had our post commander and two officers go to the National VFW Convention, I believe about 2 months ago, and President Obama was there, and there's a lot of, you know, big wigs there, and they were asked to give a presentation about what we're doing and how it's different from other VFWs, and what's crazy to me is about half the room was totally upset with what we were doing. And we're totally not on board with how we're operating, which is, you know, obviously blows my mind. But it was really interesting for me about how other VFWs, you know, this is, like, our model is not even an option for them. You know, like, you know, my thought would be that they would hear what we're doing, and like well hell yeah, like, why aren't we doing the same thing? You know, like,
yeah.
But they're very resistant to change, a lot of them, you know. They have a lot of traditions that they're used to doing, and there's not a lot of room for them to open up, which is, you know, pretty unfortunate. And unfortunately also, they're going to end up dying out because, you know, the younger veteran population isn't going to have it, you know, and they're not as integrated into the VFW. They don't have these traditions built into them, so that they're able to modify and kind of change the model as they see fit.
Yeah, I mean, the VFW, they've openly admitted now, along with a few other older veteran organizations out there, that they're soon to be extinct. Lots of older
right.
members are dying, and younger members, they just don't join because of this, you know, this idea that we have of them. You would think that the old guard and the VFW, you'd think that they'd be welcome to the change.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I think they're just ready to ride it out however it goes, and which is really unfortunate, because, you know, they're not used to being able to give resources to veterans, which is, you know, really unfortunate, you know. And our generation is used to seeing all these different people go in there and try to give veterans these resources, and the older VFW members, they've toughed it out their entire lives. They're not used to using resources, and they don't know the benefits of them. You know, they're not used to doing things that are, you know, away from the traditional drinking and, you know, telling war stories. So, I mean, that's all they know, you know? So, I mean, I can totally understand where they're coming from in that instance, but at the same time, you gotta give it up, and you gotta be willing to help veterans, you know, however you can.
Now, I did notice that you did something recently, that was, pretty interesting to me also. You mentioned all these other services you have, but recently you went on some kind of a retreat with other veterans. Is that correct?
Yeah, we're trying to do more of them. And so what we did was, with Art of War, we took about 12 veterans up to the mountains of Colorado and Granby Ranch, and they were gracious enough to donate a yurt to us, and we're up there in the middle of nowhere, and just focusing on meditation and yoga and art the entire weekend. And what was so great about it was that I reflected on afterwards is that during the meditation and during the art and during the yoga, you're not distracted by your cell phone, you're not distracted by, you know, any kind of outside distractions that you have during life, and you're able to like re-intention your life and go through and be able to, you know, analyze, you know, what you're doing right, what you could be doing better. And I don't feel like, you know, there's a lot of people that do that anymore. You know, everyone's so busy and has so much going on that they don't ever take time to kind of reevaluate their situation and, you know, try to improve on it in any way possible. And I think, we're going to try to do those retreats quarterly this year and going into next year. And then hopefully I'll be able to do them more often than that, you know, in the following years. Because I think it was really impactful for a lot of people, including myself, to be able to kind of reintention your life in a, you know, in a positive direction. And it really helped me out a lot.
It seems like a powerful idea, you know, just simply to, so many people live their lives outside of themselves. You know, they live it, you know, their mind is always on something else. It's never on what's inside. And to sit there and take some time just to simply center yourself again and learn what you are about, I think would be incredibly important to veterans returning from conflict who have been living for years outside of themselves, only in the external threat.
Right.
So that's something I would really like to see happen more often.
Yeah, it's really easy to do so. It's really good to get caught up in, you know, everything going on these days because everything's so accessible to everybody whenever they want to. But, yeah, our long-term goal is to have some property in the mountains and to be able to, you know, do these kind of programs, very frequently, and be able to partner with other programs such as Veteran Expedition or Project Sanctuary or Veterans to Farmers and have them, you know, doing their programs on the same property. So there's a retreat where people can go and try out, you know, veterans can go and try out all these different alternative therapies and hopefully take some home with them and be able to have a, you know, whole toolbox, you know, full of ways to, you know, deal with their PTSD.
Okay, now I got to bring it back to this because this is Colorado, and this was a retreat in Colorado. So, how did y'all deal with cannabis use? Like, if a veteran came along and they happened to use cannabis to treat their symptoms, how did you treat that? Did they have to go to some designated area, or were they not allowed to do it, or were they allowed to do it, you know, amongst the community, or
really,
how is that going to work?
I mean, whatever is legal is legal, you know. So it's just like with alcohol use, we ask everybody to, you know, do everything in moderation and not make a fool of yourself, you know. Like, but yeah, alcohol use and marijuana use, he was used responsibly as it always is in our programs, and we have a good time and we're able to let loose and not worry about, you know, what, any kind of backlash from that.
That just sounds awesome to me, Kurt. I got to say.
It really wasn't an issue. I mean, as you're talking about it, I was like, wow, it really was not, you know, an issue. And that's a lot to do with just how our program, our reputation is. Like, we're not really uptight. We're not really too loose. We like to have, you know, a good time and be able to do some really cool artwork and be able to, you know, create networks where you're meeting other veterans and use these networks to, you know, ideally get through certain situations. So it's really just not an issue for us, you know, and we're not dealing with anyone, you know. It's honestly pretty hard to overdo marijuana. I mean, you can do it, but you gotta be wanting to do it, you know. it wasn't an issue, yeah, and I'm really happy to say that for sure.
Okay, so let me take a second and bring it back to this lawsuit here that we're involved in. So, you know, we're suing the state for access to cannabis for patients with PTSD. And in my mind, the majority of soldiers that I know who have come back from theater, most of them with PTSD also have some kind of concurrent injury. So they do generally tend to have chronic pain and things like that. So they have other conditions that they can get medical marijuana for. This issue, I mean, it's been brought up before the CDPHC, what, 3 or 4 times? I mean, how long have you been a resident here in Colorado? Probably a long time, right?
No, about 3 years.
3 years? So yeah, I mean, you've probably seen the last few efforts, and it's been three or four by now that it's been brought up repeatedly in front of the CDPHE, and every single time it's been shot down. The most recent time was unique in that they ignored the advice of both their chief medical officer and their scientific advisory board, who are trained to evaluate the scientific validity of claims of efficacy. So, you know, obviously these medical professionals, they recommended cannabis be recognized as a therapeutic use for PTSD. So, you know, I guess my question is, you know, if so many of these guys, they are coming back from theater and they do have other physical injuries like myself, then why is it so important to have medical access specifically for PTSD for you?
Well, for me, like me personally, I really believe that we really got to work from the ground up on this whole situation, because it's really hard to change the policies. But if we start informing the public and informing veterans about, you know, how they can use medical marijuana or use marijuana in general as a tool to deal with their PTSD, that's going to really help the overall census about medical marijuana for PTSD. But medical marijuana itself is, you know, is hugely important for veterans for several reasons. I mean, for one reason, it allows them to still be functional in their community and in their family. And a lot of these drugs that veterans are on are turning them into zombies. They're turning them into people that, you know, avoid everything, any kind of responsibility, and avoid any kind of interaction with the outside public, which is closing off a lot of veterans and it's causing a lot of our suicides in veterans because they're home with their house. Yeah, the isolation is huge. You know, if you're inside your house all day, every day, I mean, you're going to start getting inside your head and getting inside, you know, thinking about things that you shouldn't be thinking about, you know, outside of a controlled environment. And so, yeah, medical marijuana, you know, and it's accessible right now for, you know, everyone in Colorado. It's very accessible. I mean, there's no red tape. You know, like if you want to get any kind of medication from the VA, it's a 3-month wait to get in there and talk to somebody. And then it's, you know, another couple of weeks here, another couple of weeks here, you know, to get any kind of resources. And then with medical marijuana, all you do is you show your paperwork to your red card, and then you go into a dispenser and you talk to, you know, someone there about your situation, and, you know, they prescribe you, you know, medication for it right there, you know, on the same day, and you're able to walk out with it. So it's the only real problem, though, is, you know, these dispensaries and these people in the industry, they don't know how to, you know, properly treat PTSD either. So that's why we're doing the education event as well, is to not only educate veterans how to use medical marijuana in the right way, but to also educate the public and people in the industry to, you know, prescribe medical marijuana, you know, to veterans, you know, in the proper way.
Yeah, I think that's huge for bud tenders in the state of Colorado. Most of them, they have no clue how to go about actually taking a diagnosis and translating it into an actual treatment plan with cannabis. And if we can simply bring our own vast anecdotal data that we've managed to accumulate on the topic to them, we could potentially be doing veterans a great service within the state of Colorado.
Yeah, I think what's really going to be helpful is that we're going to video record our panel discussion about how to properly use marijuana properly in Colorado for PTSD. Then ideally, we're going to take that video and upload it, and then, you know, kind of break it down into the evidence and like the actual information that gives people a quality to be able to access PTSD. Marijuana for PTSD, and hopefully get information to bud tenders, get the information to, you know, people in the industry, so next time they do have a question about, you know, a veteran with PTSD in front of them, they're able to already have that information, you know, in front of them and be able to access it whenever they want to.
Okay, and now I gotta go ahead and interject this in there too, because you know, you said that there's no red tape now in the state of Colorado. You can go and you can get your medical card and have it taken care of, and within a matter of like a week, you can go into a dispensary and purchase some medical marijuana. I don't know if you're really aware of this, but the Colorado Medical Board, they drafted a new policy, and it's going to limit medical marijuana prescribers. Essentially, what they're requiring is that a specialist in the field of medicine that you are actually seeking medical marijuana for must actually prescribe that marijuana for you or recommend it for you. Now, 93% of all patients in the state of Colorado have their medical card for pain. There's over 100,000 Coloradans that are registered in the medical cannabis program due to severe pain and severe pain alone. That is their primary diagnosis. There's only 115,000 medical marijuana patients total, so that's a vast majority of them, you know, over 90%. So, unfortunately, with this new draft policy, there's an issue in that there's probably about somewhere in the range of 0% of all pain management specialists will actually prescribe marijuana because they will not and they cannot endanger their DEA license to prescribe other pain control medications like narcotics. So what do you think of this new draft policy that's going to basically make it impossible for the vast majority of vets, since right now veterans, we've been denied 3-4 times now by the CDPHE recognition for PTSD. Almost all the vets that are getting medical marijuana are actually getting it for chronic pain. How is this going to impact the veteran population in the state of Colorado?
I mean, honestly, there's one good thing that veterans are good at is to be able to adapt and overcome situations as they come. And obviously, it's a garbage call, and like it's not going to be helpful to the community in general, more or less the veteran community. But it's something that we can't change in the near future, so we're going to have to adapt and educate ourselves how to get around that in, you know, legal ways, obviously, as much as possible. And I mean, using recreational marijuana is going to be, you know, a big resource for us until we can get that law or that bill or whatever it is closer looked at, so we can, you know, obviously start changing those policy, because it can't be a long-term policy. It can't be something that, I'm sure it's something they're going to try out and see how it's going to ethically fail. Like, you know, deal with the feedback from that and deal with the outcome of that, which is only going to, you know, injure rather than help people than not. So it's really frustrating. Like, it's frustrating.
Hey, Kurt, you're fading out a little bit. Are you on a cell phone there?
Yes, sir.
Okay, sorry, you're fading out a little bit. Just repeat that last part.
Yeah, I mean, anything in the government is frustrating, you know, and there's a lot of things you can't change, a lot of things you can't change, but until you find ways to change the policies you don't like, you know, adapt and overcome and, you know, find ways around it and find ways to work through it, which is what we're going to have to do, really.
Okay, well, anyway, that's about all the topics we have. Are there any other, like, upcoming events and activities from the VFW or Art of War that you want to tell the audience about and plug?
Well, yeah, as always, we have our First Friday event coming up tomorrow night. And then, you know, almost every Friday of the month, we have a art class or some form of art event going on. So just feel free to stop by in the evenings on Fridays. And as always, we have yoga on Tuesdays and Thursdays, meditation on Wednesdays. And this weekend, we're actually doing a fundraiser called the Munchie Crawl on Saturday over in South Broadway in Denver, Colorado. And we're getting a bunch of people together to, you know, raise awareness about the suicide rate being 22 and veterans, and to raise money by putting on this event for Art of War. So it's going to be a really fun event. We're just going to be having a really good time. Looks like rain tomorrow, but we'll push through it and make it happen.
So when is this? The Munchie Crawl, is that tomorrow, or is the organizational thing is today, or?
So the First Friday is tomorrow, and the Munchie Crawl is on Saturday. Crawl is from noon until 8. It's over in the South Broadway area, all day long, basically.
So what exactly does the Munchie Crawl entail?
From my understanding, they're going to be going from bar to restaurant to bar to restaurant, and they have a menu that's specifically for munchies, like smaller versions of their appetizers and meals. So people will be able to do their cannabis in a party bus and then get out and access the munchies.
Oh, wow, that sounds fantastic.
Yeah,
that's great.
It's no slacker for food either. There's a lot of really good restaurants and a lot of really good places to grab munchies at. So it's going to be I'm not really regretting volunteering all day for this event. I'll tell you that.
Yeah. So, and there's also, like, there's a Veterans Education Panel coming up, and that's October 15th. Is that right?
Yeah, very, very important for people to access that. So October 15th from 7 to 9 p.m. at VFW Post 1, 841 Santa Fe. It's going to be one for the history books. I really think that, you know, educating veterans on the possibilities of using these things, it's going to be fantastic. We already have 50 people signed up to go, which is even more fantastic, and I'm just really excited about it. I'm really excited to be able to, you know, give veterans another option to deal with whatever they're dealing with.
Well, I gotta say, I'm hella stoked about it too. I cannot wait to get this information out to veterans. More veterans need to know about medical cannabis and its utility in all kinds of injuries of war, whether it's amputees or gunshot wounds, burns, chronic pain from back injuries, TBI, PTSD, you name it, it still has utility. It has great utility. It can help fix your life. But go ahead.
Go ahead. As always in Colorado, we're leading the way. You know, we're setting up these policies and these standards that are being used across the country. So, yeah, I'm really happy that we're doing it.
Yeah, well, I want to invite every veteran to come down to the VFW Post Number 1 in Denver. Check out some of the activities and the community there. And once you check it out, you may want to join. You never know. And I want to thank you, Kurt, for being on the show today.
Thank you, Matt. Really appreciate it.
And thank you to our audience for tuning in to MGBN and 1620 Talk. This is Matthew Kale, your local cannabis evangelist. Thank you. Good night.